are listening to WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. And a warm hello to you today from the warm heart of a down-home gal somewhere in the warm heart of America. This is Prepare for Freedom, show number 21, coming to you live each Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. Central Time on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. You can find us online at www.prepareforfreedom.com and on Facebook at www.facebook.com/prepareforfreedom. My name is Sharon, and I'm your host for today's show. Now let me introduce you to my co-host and Two Cents producer, Billy Bob. Say hello, Billy Bob.
Well, hello there, everybody. Excuse me. I'm glad everybody's doing fine today on this beautiful day. Cloudy. Hey, I'm here.
Let's he go. Is most definitely here. And as you shall find out shortly, Billy Bob loves to put in his 2 cents worth. That's why we call him our official 2 cents producer. Listen to Billy Bob long enough and keep on adding up those 2 cents, and you will soon be rich. And now, on to the topic of the day. You know the name of our show is Prepare for Freedom? Well, today it's Prepper for Freedom. And Billy Bob, do you know what a prepper is?
A prepper? Is he one of them things that get things prepared for anything if you need something? Or does he or she look for things to, like, grow their own garden? Stock up on water and food and stuff like that? Which one is it?
Well, it sounds like you've asked some really good questions, and I think we have just the person on our show today to give you some answers as well as maybe some things you weren't expecting to know. We have a wonderful guest on today, and I would just like to tell you a little bit about him. I have known John Melandrin on the Internet for a while. Off and on. We talk every once in a while. And he lives a very interesting life. I'll leave it at that for the moment. I'll let him tell you more about it. Let me just share with you a little bit that he sent to me. John Melandrin grew up in a rural area in the Pacific Northwest, learning from his parents and grandparents on what it takes to survive in regards to farm animals, growing food, preserving, canning, bread making, making wine, and more. John grew up being taught the skills of a woodsman, survivalist, as some would call it, at the young age of 11 by his father, who would drop him and his friends off in the woods every spring with a hatchet, a .22 rifle, and a knife. Hmm.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, I'll bet it does, Billy Bob. John learned about animals, hunting, fishing, and tanning, just to name a few skills, by doing. He has studied survival in the woods, deserts, hills, and plains of America, and not just the pioneer ways, but also the Indian ways as well. And now, at the ripe young age of 46 years, he has started teaching others what their grandparents should have taught them. John is the founder of the Prepper Podcast Radio Network and Pioneer Living Survival, as well as a director of the American Preppers Network. Now, as I get ready to bring John on, it's very possible some of our listeners are rolling their eyes at this point, like, what is this about today? Well, just think of one word, prepper, and we'll let John take it from there as we bring him on. Hello, John.
Hello, and I'm really excited to be here.
We're excited
I've listened to your show. It's great. I've listened to your show before, and it's really, I'm happy.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed the show. I'm glad we made somebody happy. That tells us we're doing our job at trying to help out people.
No, yeah, definitely, Billy Bob. You got a fan. I love your program. Yeah, I love your program. I love how you guys do things. And so I'm really excited to be here today.
Well, we are excited to have you. And the best place to start is right at the beginning. I think I told you in a note that I sent you that you will have the opportunity to talk to people today who maybe have never even heard the word prepper before, at least not in the way that you and I are used to hearing it. And they may be pleasantly surprised to find out that it may be things they're already doing, and you can probably give them a whole lot more information to get them on the right way in these difficult times. So, Billy Bob, I'm going to let you start. As I mentioned before, Billy Bob had our pre-show consultation, and I was telling him how you are both a homesteader and a prepper, and really those are two, the two go hand in glove. But I was going to let Billy Bob start and ask you about homesteading, and as that naturally ties into what the word prepper means, we'll just let it kind of flow as it goes, okay?
Sure.
Okay, take it away, Billy Bob.
Drum roll. Thank you very much, Pip. What does homestead mean to you today?
Oh, homestead is a broad word. Homesteading, like when we first started out, we had a specific concept of it, and it's more than what we ever expected. When we settled in southeast Oklahoma and started homesteading our property, we had a specific concept that, you're going to till the land, you're going to work, and it's carefree. But it really wasn't. It's a lot of work because you're doing a lot of things by hand. You're building your cabin. You're growing your own food. You're hunting for your own food. And so there is a lot of work involved. It back in the pioneer days, they sat there and did this to survive. And we tend to think that, it's a way of life, or, it's joy-free, and it really isn't. It's a lot of hard work, more than I expected, but it was enjoyable.
Well, they did it from sun up to sunset, if I ain't mistaken, if I remember my history correctly.
Oh, yes. And so did we. It was definitely probably an hour before sunrise, your day started. You're feeding the animals. About the time the sun rises, you're working in the fields. You were constantly doing things around there. If it's not maintenance and the cabin, then it's tilling the fields, it's planting, it's canning, preserving. It's nonstop. And you're doing this until dark. Now, if you lived in a cold climate, for instance, you would be working probably 3 hours after dark just to cut the wood that it takes to actually heat your cabin. But we were fortunate enough to live in an area where we didn't actually have to do that. It's pretty warm. We only have to gather wood for about 2.5 months out of the year.
Do you think people have – this is a different question and all. Do you think people have got away from all this over the years, and do you think we need to get really back to it?
Oh, absolutely. It's we call it the lost, forgotten art of human survival. And I really do believe that people have gotten away from the pioneer life. They rely on the government. They rely on the state. They rely on people to take care of them, almost like they're owed. And they're not. The government doesn't owe you anything. The state doesn't owe you anything. And I don't believe that they have the means to actually take care of you anyways. It's not their responsibility. It is your responsibility to take care of yourself. And that's where you get back to basics. You get back to your grandparents, your great-grandparents. You know, they were the true survivalist preppers, whatever you want to call it today. They were the masters because they tamed the frontier, basically. And I don't even know if I would say tamed the frontier. They survived the frontier. And so it's your responsibility to do this for your family, and that means growing your own foods, preserving your own foods, stockpiling your own foods. And it's not that we're expecting a doomsday, even though that might occur. It could be something as simple as a snowstorm or a solar flare like back in the 1800s. It could be anything, really. And so everybody tends to think, okay, what are you preparing for? Well, not any one event. It's we're safeguarding our family when it comes to food and preparedness and being responsible for oneself. That's what it boils down to.
Okay, John, I can almost see some eyeballs rolling. You mentioned a really tough four-letter word in there. Remember the word work?
Yes.
You know, I'm not one to be picking at people or anything, but, you know, I can relate to what you're talking about. I've got a few years on me, and Billy Bob's got a few years on him, too. I think of these younger people that are coming up now that have their iPhone, their phones in their pocket, their cell phones in their pocket, and they're texting their friends all day, and the only thing they know about food is that they get it in the grocery store. What do you do when you're facing people like that and they're looking at you as if you're from outer space? What can you say to them to bring them down to earth?
It's hard. I mean, seriously, that is a hard question because sometimes, yes, they look at you like you're crazy. There's always going to be food in the grocery stores, and they're absolutely incorrect. One time we experienced, when I lived in the Pacific Northwest, we experienced something as simple as a snowstorm. And within a week, my neighbors are begging me, because I had a four-wheel drive, to drive them to the store. When we got to the store, the store shelves were empty because the delivery trucks couldn't come in. And so it's like, how do you wake these people up? Well, I don't really know. To be honest with you, the one thing I have is solutions for when they are awake.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the young kids, oh, they're Blackberries, the grocery store, the 7-Elevens, the convenience stores, they're always going to be there. Well, look at history, you know. No, they're not. It could be something as simple as being snowed in, or if you're in a hurricane area or a tornado area or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we prep for basically the unknown and the responsibility of oneself. You know, that stuff is not always going to be there. What if you, for instance, lost your job and you had to rely on your preps? And that's what we try to get across to people, is the what if factor. I'm really big on that what if, what if.
Yeah, I'm with you there. So you started off talking about homesteading and the idea of things like learning some of the things that our grandfathers and grandmothers knew. Let's take this into the 21st century now. I think Billy Bob had a question about that.
Yeah. How did you find your homestead, and how long did it take?
Well, it took a while. We actually started out not even knowing where we were going to go and where we were going to end up. And we traveled for about 6 months across the United States, zigzagging, just like the pioneers did, just not really knowing. And we found the homestead in southeast Oklahoma, luckily online, technology, hey, sometimes you got to love it. And we thought, okay, we have water, we have an old building, we have an old homestead, we can work with this. And then we started to build on it. So it did take a while to actually find the ideal spot that we chose. And it was not easy. Oh, no.
It don't sound like it was. But do you believe even today in some of the Oklahoma areas where you're at, Texas and the Plain States and even going a little more westward, do you think a lot of them still believe in the homesteading part of it?
Some. You know, it was really surprising that once we arrived there and started to set up and stuff, our neighbors, a lot of the country folk and stuff like that, were impressed that we knew how to preserve our own foods. We knew how to can. We knew how to dry. We knew how to do a lot of things. And they were actually really impressed. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. What's going on? Because I thought everybody knew how to do this when I first started out. And I learned that even the country folks have forgotten the basic art of human survival. And I'm like, you're kidding me, right? You don't even know how to make jelly. You don't know how to preserve your own foods. And so it was kind of an eye-opener because I thought there was a lot of places in America that was like this. And there might be, but not where we relocated. They were still dependent, even the country folk, were still dependent on society.
Yeah, it's amazing because, see, when I moved to Georgia from New Jersey, I learned how to survive and can and stuff, and I worked in a cannery. So I know what you're talking about that. But how did all these skills on your homestead, and how do they especially important to you right now?
Well, one of the biggest things, the learning curve, actually, because no matter how much you read or how much you know, the only way to actually do this is practical experience. And that's why when we started the website, we thought, okay, if we're going to teach this, we need to live this. And so there was a learning curve regardless of what information that you read. One of the most important things, I think, was the ability to dry and can our own foods, because it seems like not many people know that. Drying is really important, for instance, because canning, you can can, I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of jars, and that's a lot of weight, a lot of space. Drying your own foods the proper way and storing them was probably one of the most important things, because I can take a year's worth of food and dry it and put it into a small space rather than canning it and having a large area of storage.
You bring up a good point, John. I'm thinking here where we live here in the South, deer hunting is a very popular pastime. For the most part, what people do with their deer meat is they go and get it processed, they get it cut into appropriate cuts and sausage, et cetera, and they put it all in the freezer. And that's great. I love deer meat done that way. But as many of us here in the South discovered a few years ago when Hurricane Katrina came through, when the power goes out and it's out for more than a week like it was here where we are, that deer meat in the freezer is suddenly pretty nasty stuff.
Yeah. I learned actually a long time ago, my son looked at the button on the plug-in, basically, and he thought, what's this? And he pushed it and turned off the power.
Uh-oh.
And by the time I found out, and I had deer in there, and I'm like, okay, you know, my wife at the time, it's like, we either have a barbecue for the neighborhood or we process this. And so it really made me stop and think, okay, what if that power goes out? What if there's no electricity? And it could be from multiple things. It could be, you know, the power outage, a snowstorm or solar flare or anything. And so what do you do? Oh, my Lord, you got hundreds and hundreds of pounds in your freezer. What are you going to do? And so processing that meat, if it's drying it to what's called pemmican, which is an Indian way of doing things, or if it is canning it, you have to know how to preserve that meat for that what if. That's the biggest thing, the what if. I hate the what if.
Well, a lot of people start I talk to people here, they start smoking their deer meat a lot more now than smoking the meat, which helps out a lot. So it would last a little bit longer.
Yes. And dry and cold smoking, what's called cold smoking, is even better. Because if you got a root cellar, for instance, and you cold smoke your meat, so it's you're dehydrating it, basically, and you wrap it in cotton, and you can hang it unrefrigerated in your root cellar for about 3 months, 3 to 4 months. Now, if it's in the winter, of course, you can go longer than that. But in the summer, you can actually do it for about 3 months. So you have to find the alternative ways of being able to preserve your meats like the pioneers did. And so that was a really important aspect that we've learned as well.
You think we have literally gone away from the old ways of doing things now, like processed food and everything, and water can and stuff, even bottled water and everything. But back then, didn't they just cook and prepare what they actually needed? They didn't store too much of it ahead, did they?
Well, some did, some didn't. It really depends on the culture. For instance, the pioneers, they try to live like, day to day, okay? And they did store a certain amount of foods. If you go a little bit further in the future, they had root cellars. They didn't have refrigeration.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
so they came up with different ones. If you want to go further back, though, the Indians were the most ingenious because they would create what's called pemmican. They would dry their meats to the point of powder and grind it up with dried berries and stuff like that and make what's called pemmican. Now, this stuff could last forever, but gives you the proteins, the fats, and everything you need to survive. Also, they would take like dried stomachs and they would pack this in dried stomachs like leather. And they would bury it at the base of trees. And so the Indians, when they were traveling, they knew that other Indians did these routes and that there would be food at the base of these trees. Now, they have dug these up 150 years that they've been sitting in the ground in Canada, for instance, on the Wild Horse Ranch, they have found these things. And they have tested them, and there's still no bacteria in there that would hurt you. You could still survive on this. So the Indians were just ingenious on their ways of doing things. The pioneers kind of lost that technology, so to speak, the old technology, I guess you'd call it. But they still had the basic principles.
I got a good question for you, since you've been bringing all like that up. Do you think, you said we shouldn't really rely on the government because the government don't owe us nothing. I agree with that 100%. But do you believe that people need to really start taking care of themselves, being more prepared for what if, than relying on things that are going to eventually run out?
Absolutely. The government, for one, does not need to take care of you. I mean, that's not their job, really. Either is the state or FEMA or anything else. But more importantly, they don't have the resources to do it in a national disaster. Now, okay, if you want to be a doomer, that could be nuclear. It could be a solar flare like back in the 1800s where it shut down all the telegraph wires. Well, if that happened today, it would shut down our power grid, and it would take 10 years to rebuild it. And people don't stop to think about those things. So, no, it is your responsibility to take care of yourself. It's not anybody else's. You're responsible for your family. And that means education, trying to learn the old ways for the lost, forgotten art. And if you want to go to the future, even if we were a super high society that had space travel and could travel to other worlds, once you got there, what are you going to do? Rely on technology? No, you still have to know this information. We have actually a lot of people from NASA coming to the website, according to the IPs. Because they would still have to know this art of human survival. I don't think it's ever going to dwell out. I think right now, temporarily, we've kind of relied on society and forgotten that. But even in the future, if mankind makes it and nothing ever happens, you're still going to know, have to know this information, or you're not going to survive. And the more technology progresses, the easier it is to break. And so it doesn't take much. One monkey wrench into the gears could mess up the entire engine. That's
really
what I look
good
at.
Point. Yes. And, you know, you brought up an interesting point, too. I was just talking with somebody today at lunchtime about pioneer living and the pioneer spirit. And even though our younger generation seems to have lost the knowledge of it, there still is enough of it left that they still celebrate it. And they have these, like, Pioneer Day celebrations or whatever. So I think there's hope for us. I think there still is the pioneer spirit alive in a lot of us. But perhaps we just need an extra little boot in the proverbial derriere to maybe do a little bit of readjusting of our priorities. What do you think?
Yeah, and I'm not saying to carry it to the extreme that I did. You know, technology is great, but just don't rely on it. You know, that's what I always try to say. It's, you know, yeah, I had an air conditioner and I actually had a fridge.
Yeah.
I'm not Amish, even though I love them people. I really have a high respect for them. I was not Amish. So technology is great, but just don't rely on it and count on it. You know, rely on yourself for those skills on preparing your family and stuff. Don't forget your heritage, I guess it would be, because that someday might save your life. Now, it could be something as simple as you're flying to New Orleans and you crash in the mountains. Well, it would be great if you survived and you had those skills. And so it could be, I mean, something that simple.
Yes, I think anybody's own personal world could come to an end for them at any time. We don't necessarily have to talk about Armageddon or the end of the world. I think we're just trying to help people understand that nothing is cut and dried and certain and sure in life, and our pioneer ancestors had some pretty good common sense that we can use today, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, that's what the preppers are all about. We're not doomers or some doomsday or the Mayans or, you know, something like that. It's like, okay, that could happen, but we're not focused on that. We're just focused on being responsible for one's own family. And, you know, I've had a lot of prepper friends that actually have prepared, and all of a sudden they lost their job. And they're like, what do I do? My unemployment's running out. There's not enough work out there. They had to actually rely on their preps, you know, instead of going to the food bank and trying to, you know, go to the government and say, give me food stamps and this and that. And so they relied on their preps. And that's what it's about. I mean, just being responsible for oneself.
Well, John, we're going to head into a break here. And when we come back, we're going to really take that word prepper and get it out there to our listeners. And we're going to do it, hopefully, in terms that even a fifth grader can understand. And some of our listeners may be surprised to find out that they're already doing some of these things. And so they may be a prepper and not even know it. We hope so. We hope there are a lot that are starting to become aware that there may be a need to look beyond what the government might be able to do for them and are starting to think about what their ancestors did. Anyway, John, just want to thank you, and we'll get you back right after the half hour and be prepared to talk about prepping, because I know that's your love. Am I correct?
Yes.
All right. Hang on, folks. Hold on, John. Hold them horses. We are coming back right after the break. You are listening to WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. We'll be right back after this short break. are back with the second half of Prepare for Freedom. Welcome back. And this half hour, we are going to talk about the word prepper and what it means. And we have got a guest for you today who knows the word prepper, front side, back side, inside, outside, and has a website about it, radio show about it, all kinds of stuff about preppers and prepping and the prepper movement. So, John, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Are you all prepped to talk about preppers?
Yes, I am.
Always. I am thrilled to hear that. Well, I'm going to pretend, John, that I am a wide-eyed little teenage girl.
This should be interesting, folks.
I'm a wide-eyed little teenage girl brought up in the city, and I just happened to be drug in by my mom to listen to the first half of this show, and I'm saying, what is he saying, Mommy? What is he talking about? What's a prepper? Okay, John, tell this little teenage girl what it's all about.
That's real simple, Sharon. You have car insurance, right?
My mommy doesn't let me drive yet. I'm not old enough.
Okay.
But my mommy's got car insurance.
Yeah, everybody has car insurance, for instance. Some people have homeowners insurance. Some people have medical insurance. These are insurances for a disaster, for instance. A prepper has food insurance. They have medical insurance as far as being, you know, medication stored up. It could be, first aid kits. It could be suture kits. A lot of different things. So a prepper prepares to take care of themselves and their family, no different than somebody with car insurance or homeowner's insurance or something like that. And some people have asked us, well, what are you preparing for? Well, the bottom line is the what if. It could be a hurricane, tornado, snowstorm. It could be an economic collapse. We're not really sure what we're preparing for, but we understand that we're responsible for oneself. And so it's just being self-reliant is what it is.
How come they don't teach this stuff in school?
You know, that's a good question, and I've wondered that myself. A lot of times they teach you history, and you can learn by history, of course. And everybody just thinks that, you know, the grocery stores will always be there. And I found out back in, I think it was 1998, that when we had a terrible snowstorm, the store shelves were empty within a week. And I'm like, whoa. Now, I prepared back then because my parents, my grandparents have always taught me. And I guess it's kind of like remnants of the Depression. Maybe that's why. I mean, my mom taught me how to sew and cook and clean, and, you know, my dad taught me how to hunt and fish and do meats and can and preserves, and I think it was probably left over from the Depression because of the what if. What if this happened? And so food insurance is probably the biggest thing on the list when I was growing up. Because you can't rely on the grocery stores. You can't rely on the trucking industry. You can't rely on the state, the government, or anything else. And I wish more people would wake up to that fact that, you know, I think they learned with Katrina, for instance, what would happen if you didn't prepare. And Katrina was a great example because, no, the government could not take care of an entire state. Can you imagine if there was a global problem or even a United States problem? That should have been the wake-up call for every single American out there. It really should have, but I don't understand why.
I wish it had been. It certainly was a wake-up call for some of us here in the South, at least. But, you know, there's one thing. There was something mentioned in the chat room, and I'm going to put it out here in the form of a question because having been through this myself, where 1 minute you've got the power on, the computer's working, you're doing your normal TV watching, computer, texting, you've got devices on all around you that are doing different things, you're always like in touch with somebody, it seems like, radio, TV, internet, whatever it is, texting, cell phones, and then this, whatever it is, in this case it was a hurricane for us, then this whatever it is comes through and the power goes off. Well, okay, the power's off. No big deal. Well, the power's off. It stays off. And before very long, it becomes amazingly quiet. And, well, I don't know what my friends are doing. What's going on? All of a sudden, we are out of touch with everyone and everything. And that has got to be, I would think, for a lot of people, especially in more urban environments where they're not used to having to be on their own to take care of a lot of things, that's got to be a shock. And I'm just thinking, yeah, how does someone prepare for that feeling of loneliness, which could very quickly creep in there too?
That's a good question, because I don't think you could ever 100% prepare. I've been out in the desert or even on the homestead for months at a time by myself, and it is really a lonely feeling. About the only thing that keeps you going is knowing that you have to protect your family. You have to prepare for your family. You're thinking of your family. It doesn't really matter about your friends and your family out there and stuff like that. You have to deal with what you have right at the moment. And one of the biggest things is medical and food. I mean, honestly, it's like being a pioneer that travels thousands of miles and cut off from civilization in the world. And so those are the things that you have to stop and think about. I mean, it's scary, it is, but you have to, you know, just preoccupy your mind on what's going on around you at the moment instead of worrying about, you know, the things in the future or your family in another state or your friends or something like that. I mean, you really have to focus on your family and your immediate surroundings at that moment.
Very, very good point. Appreciate you bringing that up. One thing I noticed that happened here in the neighborhood here, now, we live in what you call rural Mississippi, but we do live within the confines of a small town. What we discovered happening, it took about, depends. It was 24 to 48 hours before people really kind of started getting stir-crazy. The power was not going to be coming back on right away. Trees down all over the place. Quiet as could be. Some people that did have generators started cranking them up, so we heard the occasional generator, but the quiet was unbelievable. And what happened in about 24 to 48 hours was people started coming out of their houses and looking for their neighbors. And we started talking to each other. I got to thinking after it was all over, like later on, we were without power here for almost 10 days. And I was grateful to have the neighbors that I had and that we got along, you know, that we could talk. I think about, you know, in some of these areas that are not quite as community-oriented, say, as we might be here, we are a smaller town, so people do tend to stick together a little more. But in your average urban or suburban environment where you're lucky to know your next-door neighbor, what can we do in terms of the idea of being a prepper to get past this, what could be a kind of an ugly situation if some of our neighbors don't understand this, they don't get it, and all of a sudden, within 24 to 48 hours, maybe 72 at the most, they're realizing there isn't any food in the grocery store, the gasoline stations are shut down, the water doesn't even run because it depends on electric pumping. They're starting to get a little hungry and thirsty and cranky. Uh-oh, what now?
That is a good question, and the biggest thing is, with today's society, we have a tendency to withdraw and not talk to our neighbors. And the biggest thing is, right now, while everything is good, go over and say hi to your neighbor. You know, get to know your neighbor, even if it's just normal chit-chat. You know, it doesn't really matter, you know, if you like them or not. I mean, go over there and have a conversation. That's really important because you want them to know you and stuff. Because in a major collapse or something that happens, you're not going to survive on your own. You're going to need your neighbors. You're going to need your community. And I think people have withdrawn to the point where they don't want to talk to their neighbor. They don't want to know their neighbor's business or nothing else. And I make it a point to go over it and I meet my neighbors. I have a neighbor not too far that I know is a prepper. I mean, I've never really talked to him too much except, hi, how are you? And I've been meaning to go over and say, you're a prepper, aren't you? Because they got chickens and they have water collection buckets off the roof, and I've already met the other two neighbors. they're swell guys. You want that community type thing. Even if you think, well, I don't want to get involved or this or that. No, that's how this started.
Uh-huh.
People started to withdraw, and with the internet and everything that's going on in the world, people stopped talking to their neighbors and learned the neighbor's skills too. I mean, that guy could be a mechanic. This guy, you know, next door could be a farmer, so to speak. I mean, you don't know, so you want those different skills. You want to be able to know around you who has the skill for what and be friends with them, because that's safety's in numbers. You know, just like when, you know, the Indians would attack, the wagons were circled.
Yeah. Okay, well, John, we want to make sure you've got time to tell people about what you do. And you have certainly, in my humble opinion anyway, found a marvelous way to turn the internet into a wonderful tool to help people learn about these so very important skills and do it in a fun way. I've listened to a few shows on your Prepper Podcast network, and you've got quite a variety of shows and guests. And, of course, since we do internet radio here, we have a common interest. We want to make sure you have time now. Go ahead. Tell us what you do, where you shine, how you can help. Tell us about your website. Go for it.
Oh, there's so many. when I first started out, I created pioneerliving.net, which is Pioneer Living Survival. And it's a free website. It has tons and tons of pages and free information. It's all free. I just wanted it. I got greedy. I wanted to, you know, figured, well, if I save, you know, 10 lives, okay, if I save 100 lives, if I save 1,000 lives. So I kind of got greedy with it. I just kept going because it was really important to me. And then I started working with the American Preppers Network, which is the AmericanPreppersNetwork.com, and became a director. And I control a lot of different websites and a lot of different information, and just started going from there. And then I had the opportunity. The original founder of the Prepper Podcast was Matt, and when he retired from it, I created the Prepper Podcast Radio Network, which we have, I think, 21 shows a week. And I tried to get a diversity of the different hosts to do different shows so that everything was different, trying to get the word out there, which is free, of course. I mean, everything we do is free. And just trying to get the information out there. If it's back to basics, if it's a little bit of educational programming, that's what we're involved in. And then, of course, promoting other websites, like, for instance, your show. We love promoting other organizations and other websites. We're all trying to do the same thing, is get the information out.
That sounds great. And I just wanted to make sure that people had a few websites, too. I'm posting the Prepper Podcast Radio Network website in the chat room right now. It's kind of a long one, but looking at, you've got news for preppers now. You've got, like you say, you've got like some 21 shows. And so anyway, just in simple terms, correct me if I'm wrong, it's www.blogtalkradio.com/the Prepper Podcast. Is that correct?
Yes, or you can go to theprepperpodcast.net or .com, actually,
okay.
prepperpodcast.com. And we have a 24-hour feed that goes to every technology in the entire world, from Stitcher Radio. We're also on AM Radio, 1290 AM in San Diego. We're on 18 different radio networks. You can receive us on your BlackBerry, your smartphone, your iPhone, regular phone, pretty much any technology in the world. And so we broadcast worldwide, and we have a 24-hour, 7 days a week feed as well. And then and that's on the prepperpodcast.com.
Okay.
And then, of course, pioneerliving.net is our my one main website as well. So, and then we have the news site that we just started, which is pprnnews.prepperpodcast.com, that is focusing on news radio and alternative news as well.
Yes, I just want to thank you for sharing all those, and I'm going to turn it back over to Billy Bob for a minute to see if he's got some more he wants to ask you.
Okay.
I'm here somewhere. You know, you're talking about something about out in the desert. You were out in the desert and all. But there is one thing when you're out in the desert and all, there's one thing you really got to look for first is water.
Yes.
Because if you don't have water, you're going to die in a short amount of time and days.
3 days.
In 3 days, that's correct. Do you have a horse with no name out there?
Oh. No. But there's a lot of things in the desert. For instance, it's funny, the barrel cactus, for instance, when you're out in Arizona, a lot of survivalists will say that you're going to get dehydrated and this and that if you eat the barrel cactus. That's totally incorrect. It's not one of those myths, you know, because they don't know, they're not familiar with it. You can actually get water from those. You can cook it. You can eat it raw. Yeah, if your body's not adjusted to it, it's going to affect you for the first day, and after that, your body adjusts. So that's, you know, it's totally a myth. There is water out there. And then another thing is the solar water collector, basically. You always carry plastic because you want to dig that pit, especially in the washes, and have it funneled down so where the condensation from the wash comes up, hits, purifies the water, and goes into a container. So there is means of getting water out there if you know what you're doing. I took desert survival for probably about 2 months. Actually, I was out there, even down to eating raw spoiled meat. And people say you can't live on that, and yes, you can. If you boil it every single day for 20 minutes, we actually did that for a week, and you can. And I learned a lot of things about how to find beehives to Mormon tea. I mean, just a phenomenal amount of information that you can survive out in the desert.
A lot of people don't, you know, that's the first thing, because, you know, you got to survive, and desert is one of the hardest places to survive in, because there's, you know, no hardly any vegetation. Like you said, you have to make use of what you have there to survive. So you have to be prepared. I guess you would have to be prepared physically and mentally to go out there to survive. Would that?
Well, yeah, and no, absolutely correct. And it's just like looking back at like Afghanistan or Iraq or any of those places. when you have desert nomads, okay, they're not out there surviving in that desert. They're living there. You know, that's their way of life. That's how they live. They're not surviving. They're living. And so it's just the knowledge that it takes, like being covered up, for instance, you know, wearing loose clothes so that the condensation doesn't get on you to where it's breathable, being covered up, insulated, so to speak, so that the heat's not beating down. You'd find most Americans shedding their clothes, you know, thinking that that's going to help them, and it actually doesn't. And so that's one of the first things we learn, and then how to obtain water out there. Even when you think there is none, there actually is. So it was very interesting training. I really enjoyed it. I came from the Pacific Northwest, where I was trained in the woods, and of course, in Washington State, for instance, there's a lot of water. It rains a lot. And so to go there was an actual unique experience that I really did enjoy. I learned a lot.
So actually, no matter where you're at, you mostly have to learn how to survive and be prepared for what you're fixing to get into. So that's the only way you know how to live and all, but a lot of people just don't do that now, do they?
Yeah, well, exactly. And it's no different than being in a snowy situation like up in, I don't know, like Idaho or Wyoming or Montana or something like that, where if I was trapped in the snow, it's like, oh, I'm totally out of my environment. But you have snow caves that you can create. You don't want to eat the snow. You want to be able to boil it because, you know, and get your water. I mean, there's certain survival situations for each individual environment. And I've probably taken it to the extreme to learn that. I'm confident enough, I think, that if you drop me anywhere in the world, I would be able to survive. And I teach this to my daughter as well. I mean, my daughter is now 11 years old, and she loves grasshoppers. I mean, she'll pull the wings off grasshoppers and the legs off, and she'll put a little chocolate on it, and she'll eat it.
I remember that from I remember eating those.
Yeah, and so she doesn't like crickets too much, but unless you garlic them. But grasshoppers are great. And then we'd go out in the woods and we'd find it's not actually like caterpillars, but they're like little worms in a cocoon that we'd find in some of the trees. And we would sit there and eat them. And she does not have a problem with that.
Wow.
So I trained my daughter to be able to survive in any environment, just like my father did to me. If you're in a survival situation, this is what you need to do. Now, a lot of people are going to say, well, I'll do that when I'm starving to death. Well, wait a minute. No, you won't. Because how many times have you went to your cupboard and says, well, I don't see anything I really feel like eating, so I'm not going to eat today. You know, it's been proven in studies that you're probably going to starve to death. If you're not willing to do it now, you're not willing to do it in a survival situation. And so that's why I train my daughter like that.
Well, this has been great, John, and I really appreciate your sharing about what you were teaching your children. And I hope we didn't gross anybody out, but really, when you're brought up with it, it's great.
Yeah.
We need to wrap this up. Just want to thank you so much, John, for coming on, and we hope that we can maybe get you on again at a later date.
No problem.
Wish you well.
Enjoyed having you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Really enjoyed having you.
All right. Looks time for us to get on out of here, and so we're going to do that until next time. Remember, it's never too late to prepare for freedom.